chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Dana Spinola on the show today. Dana is the founder of Fabric, an author, speaker, mom of four, wife, philanthropist, and faithful follower of Jesus. Well, Dana Spinola, a girl, it is good to see you. For one thing, I've not seen you since February in person, so it's wonderful to see you. Thank you so much for making the time to be on the show today. We've got so much to talk about and good stuff. I know that your story and everything that you're doing, you've got so much wisdom to share with our listeners. I just appreciate you so much and thank you for being on the show.
I'm so glad to talk to you again. If it takes being on the show to talk to you again, I hope we get to catch up over a legit cup of coffee too. But this is a beautiful way to catch up with you, Lisa.
Absolutely. Well, you and I always kind of want to take our listeners back to how we connected because, you know, it's important, right? You know, to say yes to things sometimes. It's also important to say no. You know, we may talk a little bit about that, but you and I both said yes to being part of an organization called CEO Forum. And so that's how you and I met. And then in February, there's a wonderful women's executive retreat at South Hall, which was over the top, was it not?
So cool. I mean, everyone's like, there's this secret little place outside of Franklin. And I had no idea a farm could be so incredibly beautiful and cool.
So special. So if you're looking for a place to go, listeners, check it out. It's wonderful. But we were at that retreat and we got to spend even more time. In fact, on Saturday, we had a little bit of free time. And I got to go to your fabric store in Franklin, your little boutique. And I was a very good patron, Dana. I did buy several pieces from you that day.
So, thank you. Yeah, y'all all came back with a bunch of bags. I was super, super grateful. But it's a fun little get together with your girls, sneak away time.
Absolutely. Well, you live in Atlanta. You're the proud mom of four children, Hudson, Lincoln, Ryder, and then Asher, who is your adopted daughter from Ethiopia. And we're going to talk a little bit about her because there's some really special things there. You're the CEO of and founder of Fabric, married to Angelo. You also own 20 chickens, 2 dogs, Vader and Cowboy, which I know you absolutely love. You're a philanthropist, faith-filled community leader. I mean, seriously, Dana, you got a lot going on. And I'm going to add one more thing. You always look like $1 million. You always look put together. So I'm going to ask you later, what is the secret of being able to do all that, you know? But before we do,
there's a big, it's really, really easy. It's a big secret. I'll wait till the end to tell you because it's so easy.
Okay. Well, see, now that's going to be the appetizer for our listeners, because they're going to want to know your secret. So we'll wait till the end to talk about that. But I want you to take us back to your childhood. And I think, you know, you had amazing parents that were very influential in your life, your dad and your mom, both, you know, and so even like, Dina, what I'd love for you to talk about even is like what you love to do as a child. And I really do believe, I've not done research on this, but I cannot tell you how many leaders I've had on and kind of what they loved as a child kind of manifests itself later in what they're doing. And that certainly is the case with you. And I just think that you and I could do an interesting study on that sometimes. Cause I mean, I just think, I can't even tell you how many times that it's kind of the core of who you are. So, but talk to us about your childhood, talk about all that. And then I've got a lot more to talk about.
Absolutely. It's so true. Everyone I mentor, everyone I talk to, who kind of, you know, my space in the world has kind of become to inspire people to figure out, you know, what they love to do. And because I, you know, by the grace of God, I'm doing what I love to do. Not that it's not insane work, you know the thing, but yes. And that is a question I ask so much is, so what, who was like the 12-year-old little you? What was she doing? What was she dreaming about? And it is uncanny, like you said, how many people go back to, well, I just love to spend time out with my horses, or I was always, you know, the person that was staying late after school, helping with the AV club. Like it really is that person. So who I was as a kid, you know, I was the daughter of two hippie artist parents. You know, my dad's hair was longer than my mom's, and it was just, they were 18 when they got married and just living, you know, off the land. We lived in like this one bedroom, cool little place. You know, I had no idea it was because we had no money. In my mind, we were just like, you know, living this like passionate life. And my mom made all my clothing. And I thought I had a stylist. I had no idea that it was not what you did. We was Saturdays went and got, you know, fabric, and I picked out buttons and zippers and came home, and she always had a pin in her mouth and was pinning it. And I'd go to school and they're like, those aren't jams or those aren't guest jeans. I'm like, I know, they're made by Anne. And so it was one of those things where I loved it from the beginning, and I had no idea that this isn't how you just kind of, you know, spend a Saturday. And every babysitting dollar I made went to Vogue magazine. I mean, from a little girl, I remember just walking up to get that magazine and wallpapering my room with those. And I don't think I had a friend that did this. I don't think I knew anybody else to do this. So it's so neat to look back of, it was really just oozing from my soul. I mean, my parents were artists. They weren't, you know, in fashion. So it's, I when I think back to my little self, it was always something that I would just fall asleep because I wallpapered my ceiling too, just the image. Yeah. And every season, every 4 months, I would redo it again because it had to be fall. It had to be spring. But there was something just that the inspiration part of it all is like, wonder, I wonder if that could ever be what I did. And, you know, as we both know, you know, life doesn't really lay out like a job description around your passion per se. So, you know, as I grew up, I never really saw many opportunities. There was really no one in my life. I didn't understand what a mentor was or what exposure to different things were. So I never really saw that that could be a career, but It was in me from day one.
Yeah. Well, I've thought about that. Your parents were artists. So, I mean, even like in your home, and we'll talk more about that, but there was an inspiration. There was a love of beauty, I think, Dana, that was put into you because of your artist and the creative piece of all of that. So I know that they were, you know, incredibly inspirational to you. But let's talk about this. So this was you as a little girl, but then you said, okay, you know, I got to get an education. You went to University of Georgia, and then you went on to take a management job at Deloitte. And in fact, you did very, very well. You did very well there. You were promoted to a manager at a very, I think you were very young, right? So you did well, but kind of, you know, what was kind of happening inside of you? And talk about your parents and what the kind of the mantra that they lived by and kind of instilled in you.
Yeah. And, you know, even every time I hear someone say that back to me, it's so important because everyone always says, you know, you did so well. And, you know, by so many standards of life, I did so well. You know, my parents, you know, didn't go to college and I was the oldest child and I went to college and I got a scholarship. And the first day at UGA, I walked into the counselor's office and said, "What's a job that makes a lot of money?" And they said, "Management information systems." I'm like, "Perfect. Then that shall be my life." And I grew up, the mantra that you're referring to, my parents would say all the time, to the point that I thought they made this up: if you love what you do, you'll never work another day in your life. And they modeled that. So I was very, very clear on what that looked like and felt it, and the passion of when you're using the gift God gave you, how good it feels. And I think this is the part where, you know, I tell everyone, I abandoned that so quickly my first day of college for a security that the world told me would be more important. And I always look back and, you know, I never have regrets about it. It's just a story that I want to make sure I tell everyone who will listen. You know, things can seem so enticing. So I jumped into that major, actually learned a lot. You know, I think it's an incredible major to learn business, to learn different companies. And, you know, I remember signing my acceptance letter when I started at Deloitte Consulting, just like, I've made it. And I had that feeling of like, wow, here I go. And it wasn't a year in till that, you know, who I am kind of came back into this of, wait a second. You know, I tell the story of being in San Francisco. I had clients in every city and, you know, flying all over, and, you know, they paid for my dry cleaning. That was just amazing to me. I couldn't believe what was happening. Yeah. And the little things, you know, I was like, wow. And my dad called my dad from a payphone and just kind of updating him on my job. And he's like, God, it sounds great. You know, I'm getting promoted. Everything's going at per plan of someone's plan, maybe the world's plan. It wasn't necessarily my plan. And waiting for him to be super proud. And long story short, he was like, do you love what you do? I was like, well, Dad, I think I'm good at it. And he's like, I know, that was not the question. And so that, you know, catapulted me back to, wait a second, like, there's no better time than this exact moment to do what I believe I'm supposed to be doing. And so on that flight home back to Atlanta, I started the business plan for one little store. It was not supposed to be what it is today. It was just, if I could just get back to having one little store where I could, you know, kind of live and breathe what I think I'm put on this earth to do, then that'd be a start. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
Terrifying. Yeah. Like, I'm sure I don't forget to say at this point, it wasn't like peace was all around. And, you know, I mean, I remember calling my mom and her saying, wait, you are going to leave that a six-figure job to open a store? Like, have you thought about this? And there, you know, it's hard to reconcile security with, you know, purpose. So yes. I do feel like that, because everyone thinks it's easy. There was nothing easy about it, but it did feel like the, you know, what was right for my soul.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and we're going to dig into this, but so many beautiful things have come out of that too, you know, Dana, that really bring even more meaning to your life. But I want to read something in 2018, you know, and I'm so excited because I've got some sisters that tomorrow are on a retreat and I ordered some of these books for them. I'm so excited for them to get your book. But in 2018, you wrote the book, Love What You Do. And I love the subtitle, Dana: Ignite Your Passion, Find Your Purpose, and Live Life with Meaning. And I just think that's so beautiful. But I'm going to read this from your intro. It says, doing what you love is about dreaming and creating a life infused with meaning. Meaning comes when you stop thinking about what you want and start serving others' needs. It's about finding the purpose that God has tucked away inside of you and using it as rocket fuel that propels you how you live, grow, create, and serve others. I don't think it's something that you have to search the world to find. I think it's already inside each and every one of us. And I just think that that is so beautiful. And we're going to talk about purpose and passion and meaning and all of those things. And, you know, you say the intersection of your passion and your purpose is really a meaningful life. That equals a meaningful life. Something else that you say, it's not selfish to do what we love with one, this one precious life. It's our responsibility.
So, isn't that different when you put the word responsibility in there? It really does. It changes things. It really does. Because, you know, I believe God wants us to enjoy every single gift he's given us. But when you look around and see, okay, if we're not all kind of piecing this together, there is a responsibility for all of us to use our gifts. So yes, agree.
I think we're going to be held accountable for the things that we've been given and the gifts that we've been given, right? So, but I love this too. And because some of our listeners, and we'll dig more into this because I see this with people. And I think the last, you know, several years have been really difficult for people, you know, with purpose. And I see young people like lacking purpose and not really having that true north. But here's kind of what you say. And I think this is a really good way of thinking about it. I think, you know, asking ourselves these questions is really maybe a good starting point. But you say, what brings your heart excitement? What brings your heart excitement? That is your passion. What do you love to do? That is your passion. But what breaks your heart, that is your purpose. And when you can intersect those two things, that is, you know, that equals a meaningful life. And I just think that that's really just so, so beautiful. Here's another quote from you that I love. Settling for like is not an option when you know that love is out there. Wow.
Right? I
mean, yes. Why
would you just say fine? It's fine. It's fine. Like, this is our one precious life. And fine is, maybe there's days of fine, but I just hope we're all looking for that intersection. You know, I know it sounds bigger than it is, but I remember when I was telling people that, you know, I have clothing stores and I'm pretty positive that, you know, God wants me on the team that is ending sex trafficking and figuring out how those two go together. I remember sitting with my team saying, so listen, y'all, I mean, a lot of people don't even like to use the word sex trafficking out loud because it's such a horrific thing that's happening. So they're like, so you're going to sit on the end of runways, you're going to pray in the middle of a spring, you know, launch, and you're going to talk about trafficking. Like, I don't know if the world wants to hear about that. And I just remember being like, well, there's not really an option here. And so you realize it actually, fashion, it's the best place to do that because now you have so many women who are interested in fashion, but with huge hearts and don't really know how to intersect it. But it's the same for everyone else. There is something that's so unique to you that breaks your heart that you'll be at a dinner party and you'll be talking about it. It's not breaking everyone's heart the same way. And I think that's the difference. A lot of people will say, well, everybody's doing it. Everyone feels that way. And someone's probably taking care of it. It's actually not really the case. So to raise your hand and say, well, I'm going to do what I can do. It gets exciting to use the gift of whatever your love of, if it's doing yoga and figuring out how that combines with something that breaks your heart. Like, I just watch this happen with people and they'll call and they'll say, you won't believe what I just combined together. Mm-hmm. And it really makes me feel like, cause you're pouring out in your purpose, right? Like, you're fueling others. And it is hard cause you see a lot of heartbreak, but that's why that passion's so great. Like, I've never lied to anyone. You know, my passion is clothing. I'm not saying it's, you know, the most worldly, incredible passion, but I'll be in a meeting, Lisa, and we have white glass, I mean, not white, clear glass walls in all of our windows at our corporate offices. And when UPS comes in and there's boxes of clothing, I just do a whole, hold on one second, someone go open that. And I'm okay with that. It is my passion. It is, you know, the idea of where am I going to wear this dress? I will make up an event to wear a dress to. I will take you over for no apparent reason because I need to wear this dress. But the same thing with the purpose is on Thursdays, my team and I will go into, you know, the safe houses and we'll talk more about what we do there. And you leave and your heart's hurting and their hearts are hurting. But the idea that, okay, we're going to keep fueling the world, but you do have to fuel yourself too. And you said, we have a hurting world right now, a lot of us, right? It's not selfish to really take care of your passion. Just, you know, be looking around to see who really needs to be fueled too.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, we're going to dig into more of that. I do want you to tell our listeners though, because Dana, here's my thing. You need to come open a fabric or three or four in St. Louis. You've got four of these stores now, or 40 of these stores. I think you have several in Atlanta, but you didn't start out with that. You know, that's the other thing I would say about an entrepreneur, you know, is, you know, start small. You know, the lean startup is a really good way to look at things. Don't like try to go boil the ocean. You know, you started with one, you got that one very successful. And then what happened was you would have customers that would say, hey, you know, I was in Austin and I was looking for a fabric because I needed an outfit and you don't have one there. And so it just kind of organically grew from there. But 6 years after college, so you were at Deloitte for a while, but you decided to hop on the entrepreneurial wagon. I love the mission statement, high style with heart, but tell our listeners more just tactically about, you know, fabric and where they can find it and about the, you know, your business model, which is, sure. I don't want to say it for you. I want you to say
it. Yeah, I'd love to. You know, it's exactly, you said it probably nicer than my customers did, but they would just call up the stores and say, why the heck aren't you in Raleigh? Well, I'm here and I don't have a dress for the wedding. And like, how dare you not open? And I remember being like sad and realizing, wait, that's supply and demand. You know, I'm going back to my like college classes, like, okay, she's not mad at me. She actually just needs a location. And so, yeah, a dreamer starts with a dream, not necessarily a plan. So I opened one store, then I opened another local store and realized, wow, I need to actually open more stores. And so it takes a different part of your heart and part of your brain if you're an entrepreneur and you just want to hold your baby, right? Like you just want to be there. And I was my first employee and I was, you know, my first accountant, my first everything. And as you let it go, it takes a different part of, you know, your soul that says, okay, I'm going to trust the model and I'm going to start expanding. So I started expanding. And in the beginning, we used the franchise model and found other women like me that were, you know, wanted to be a mom and wanted to have a business. And, you know, were from the area, knew Raleigh and knew Austin and knew their communities, knew their nonprofits. And so could really dig in. And that's really what Fabric's been about, is just like clothing the community. And so that's how we just started. And it, again, beautiful idea, which I had to keep saying no to. I mean, daily people were like, and we're going to open. And another life lesson that was very hard too is saying no. I wanted to open every, I'm like, okay. And my COO, Jenny was like, okay, can you just, we need to open these well. So I need you to slow down. I'm like, yes. And so, you know, growing well is really important as well. And then obviously when you bring on e-commerce, you know, selling online, it's a whole different market and selling to a whole different customer. So as the business evolved, you know, we brought in our nonprofit, really sticking true to your brand is the number one challenge as you start to, not even as you start, for the rest of your life. Remember who you are and who you want to be, and then just being the best version of that.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, Dana, we've got so much more to talk about, but we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dana Spinella on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
So welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my dear sister, Dana Spinella. So Dana, you opened up that first store in Atlanta, that first fabric store. You had an amazing grand opening with lots of friends, and you can talk about that, but then I want you to talk about the next morning.
You want me to talk about the part that I used to never talk about? I, you know, as a leader, or especially as, you know, the founder of your company, you think your only job is to inspire people and tell the good stuff so that everybody wants to do it. And they learn that, you know, if you work hard, then, you know, it all works out. And so I've told this story for probably 5 years and never told the second part, not because I wanted to hide it. I just didn't think it was something that people wanted to hear. And the first time I told it, I mean, I remember my mentor now says, don't ever spend time with someone who's, you know, thinking about building something or doing something that you don't tell this to. So I'll tell y'all the second part of it. But like you said, I'd opened my first store. I mean, it was a year of, I don't think I went to sleep before 2 a.m. and woke up at 5 a.m. just working on my business plan, just putting my heart and soul into this business plan. Went to 14 banks, got rejected by all 14 till the 15th, gave me a little line of credit, and I opened. And I'm from Atlanta. I went to University of Georgia, went to Roswell High School. So I'm literally calling everyone I know to show up. I just need someone to shop this store. And they did. And there was a line of hundreds of people outside. And I made every single tag myself, Lisa, every single tag. I wrote it and I wrote the price tag on it. It was not technical. Nothing was coming from a system. Every bit of heart and soul I had in here. And it started working. And we did a fashion show inside and people start buying clothing. And I just had that moment that you dream of. It really is from the movie where you're like, it's working. Look, you know, like money's coming in and this I might just pull this off, right? Yes. I basked in that. And I think we all should, those moments of like, okay, this is what I did all the hard work for. And so, you know, ended that night out and, you know, went home, fell asleep. And that kind of sleep that you haven't had in a long time, and thought I'd be sleeping in the next day to be officially open. You know, the next day was our first day really opening the store to the public. And so I get my like 40-inch heels on and, you know, jeans and skinny little jeans and top. I mean, I remember exactly what I was wearing, and I pull in to my store with my huge coffee and just like, this is going to be the best day, literally to see like shimmering, like glitter all down the drive. And I look to the right of the store and it's like slow motion. It really is like your brain can't really process what's happening and all the windows are busted in. And they're the shattery kind and there's like blood on them. And it's just, it's like a scene from like a movie where like this can't be. And I pull around and I walk in and it's not like a couple pieces of clothing were taken, that literally everything was gone. I mean, all the clothing was gone, but the register was gone. Every shoe out of every shoe box, the mannequins didn't have clothes on, the stereo taken. And, you know, just like a pause of, wow, you know, this really can all go in a minute. And also just the feeling of failure coming just 1,000 miles in from such a high. And I do what, you know, any business owner does. I called my dad.
I love that.
I remember being like, Dad, like, who do you call? What do you do when it all goes away? And, you know, him and I joke now, but like there was a little laugh, a little smile on the phone. He's like, welcome to your own business. And it hits so awesome now, because I thought I became a business owner the night before when everyone's like, this is all great. You did it. You did your business plan, right? No, I became a business owner when I'm sitting, like I fell to my knees, as dramatic as that sounds, but I'm like, and there's broken glass and blood and all this. And I called the police. I'm like, come. It took them 3 days to come, right? Like this isn't a top case for them. And just sitting there saying, well, this is the time. And always joke, but you know, to me spiritually, but there's like angel devil on my shoulders. Like the devil's like, told ya, should have stayed at your other job. It was easy. It was, you know, it was set. You had
a path.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You had a plan. Yeah. And now you just put it all on yourself and look what happened. Like, give up. Are you serious? It's over. And I just remember like the Holy Spirit, this feeling of just saying, you know what? That might be true, but it's not today. Like, I still have chills because I can go back so easily to, that might be true. This may not work, but it sure isn't going to be today. And like pulled out my yellow pages, found the place that you can, you know, get plywood onto walls. And the next day I called all my vendors and said, listen, I'm the girl that just opened that boutique. They're like, congratulations, you've sold everything. Because I said, I need it all again. I said, I didn't sell it, but if you give me 30 days, I'll sell it. This is what happened, but you can trust me. And it was like, I decided to bet on myself again in the hardest of circumstances. I called my insurance, you know, that they said I set my alarm wrong. So I wasn't getting a penny from insurance. Like all of the things I think that happen in a movie, when you're in it real life, you've got to really rely on, you know, your faith in yourself. And I still believed in myself. So that's what I did. And I remember 30 days paying all those vendors back, just not knowing if it was going to work after those 30 days. But I knew I was the type of person that would give it everything I had. And you know, when you get to believe in yourself after you get knocked down, there's a feeling to that that's just like, let's do this. So probably the worst and most incredible business lesson I will ever learn. And I got to the blessing of learning it day one.
Exactly. It wasn't after a week. It was day one. Oh my goodness. Well, Dana, there's just so much packed in there. But, you know, the thing I take away from it is don't give up, you know, and there's going to be setbacks. There's going to be things that happen in anybody's business that you're like, oh, this is too hard, you know? Oh my gosh, you know? I'm grateful though. I mean, because Greg and I founded our company 29 years ago and really we didn't know much.
That way.
And there are some days where I'm like, I still don't know too much, you know? But I'm really grateful because sometimes if you knew, you might not do, right? And so.
One other quick thing that you said that I just love is, you know, it's hard. It's really hard to keep going. And sometimes it is time to say, you know, let's throw in the towel, but the reason why, not just because it gets hard, that's not the time. You know, I've watched people I really respect say things like do the most brave things where they're like, it's got to stop now. And I'm blown away by their bravery, but it's never really after something where everything seems like it's the right thing to do. And it just got hard. So
yeah, I love that. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, don't give up because of that, right? You know, I've got so much more here to talk about, but I do want to kind of talk about this, Dana, because I think this might help our listeners. But, you know, I mean, you really did, you dug deep, you know, you really did the work to figure out what lit you up. You know, what is it that I really love to do? You went back to your 12-year-old self. You know, how would you coach someone if somebody's sitting there going, you know, I'm in this job and yeah, I'm making great money, but you know, this does not light me up. I mean, how would you coach somebody if you were having coffee with someone? How would you even start to get some clarity? Because you got to get clarity about that.
You're so right. And you know, there's so much in that in how you coach someone, but usually I, you know, if I have a short amount of time with someone, I just go to the easiest question in the world is what would you do for free? I would do my job for free. I did it for free in the beginning. You know, I would do it for free. And even now in my career where I am, I would do it for free. And I'm not saying that financial independence and security is not very important. Fortunately, what I've watched in my life is when people are doing things and they're not doing it just for the money comes around. The finances, because you're doing it well, you're doing with every bit of passion you have. And, you know, I have a friend, David Sawyers at Chick-fil-A, and he's like, I want your salary to be the last reason that you work here. And I always think about that. And so for me, I want them to want to do it for free. Like I remember we had this thing at Fabric called a burn notice, and we would put it on people's desks and we're like, go home. Go home. Cause they're like, I love this. I love this. I love this. I love this. So if that's not there, guess what? It's not because you've got a bad boss, or it's because you're not doing the thing that lights you up, and that's okay. But do the work to try to find that out. And I think a lot of people stop there. A lot of people say, well, it's not terrible. You know what? My job at Deloitte was beautiful. I mean, it was a blessing in so many ways. It just wasn't my thing. And I think I will say one of the bravest things I've done is to leave something that's good for something that's great, right? Like if it's terrible, that's easy to jump out of. So would you do it for free is the first question. I know it sounds silly and it sounds cliche, but when you really get with you and yourself on a journal and you can write what those things that you would do for free, they probably sound so fun and exciting that you're like, that could never be a job. Yeah, it could. So, and guess what? It might not be the actual product. It might be that I would love to be an entrepreneur, or I'd love to be an artist, or I'd love to have my own something. So it's not necessarily a job title. And that's what I talk so much about. I learned in my book process. I'm not an author and I had no plan on writing a book. As you know, I was just on a sabbatical. And when you have a type A personality like me, I'm like, okay, day two of sabbatical. I already rested. Now to write a book. So I had to research like all of those things and learning from people. The people I admire love what they do. They work their tails off, but they absolutely love it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you just set me up. Perfect segue here. Okay. You know, I mean, you've got lots of superpowers. I'd love to talk about that. You know, there's, you know, I always say there's also dark sides. There can be dark sides to our strengths. And we could talk a little bit about that. But really, you know, let's move into this, because you talked about your sabbatical, but in your book, Dana, I was just, your chapter 8 really resonated with me, because I'm really seeing a lot of people there right now. And, you know, you're working, fabric is doing awesome, you know, but you got to the point where you're working so much that, you know, and I think it was your CMO, I think, that had said, hey, can we just have coffee? And you're like, yeah, would love to have coffee. And you go, nobody ever asked me to just go have coffee. Yes. And so the first thing she said is, are you okay? And you admitted and were vulnerable. I said, no, I'm not okay. You know, but your chapter 8 is, the title is burnout.
Yeah. Even when you say that to me, like I almost tear up, like there's really nothing, I think, more powerful, vulnerable, and, you know, intimate than asking someone when you're really asking. Like the way she asked was so intimate and caring. And when you're a leader, no one's asking if you're okay. You have to be okay. So that's not even a question. It's kind of like if you're a mom, your kids aren't really sitting there and saying like, thought about you today and you got a lot going on and I just want to make sure you have what you need as a mom. You're just doing, right? And I had put it on the back burner. I had, you know, 4 young kids under the age of 10 and, you know, just, I was lucky to get them all 4 to school, jump on a conference call and not forget my heels for my meeting. And it was all too much, too fast. It was all good. And I think that's what gets really hard is what do you put down when you have so much that feels really good and you realize it all just, you know, you're not showing up really to anything. I mean, I wasn't showing up for myself or for anyone. And what made her say that was her true care for me, but her true care for Fabric and also for our team. You know, when you have a leader, and I'm just going to speak from a leader's perspective, but I can talk about it as a mom. I can talk about it as a friend. I can talk about it in my forum groups that I'm in. If you have someone showing up that's burnt out, I don't know how you show up when you're burnt out, but I'm kind of like a dog in the corner that's like kind of growling a little bit because I'm like hurt and I'm just snappy and I want to care. I just got nothing left to, I can't care. And so just trying to get through until 10 o'clock to start this whole thing again. And that's not a life. Mm-hmm. And so she saw that. She saw that like, I couldn't say no to anything. I'd take 5-minute meetings. Like, and I needed you in that 5 minutes, tell me what you needed, how I was going to fix it, and then get the heck out of my office. Cause I love you, but I've got to move on. That's not who I am as a human. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a pretty compassionate, loving person. I love that about me. That was gone. It was just transactional. And so to stop and someone to look you in the eye, which I don't know how many years have been until someone had done this, but when she said, are you okay? I felt for about 10 seconds, well, obviously the whole conversation, but there was a clearing where I thought, like, I could hear myself telling myself, she really wants to know the answer. Because everyone else, I'm like, oh yeah. And they're like, how do you do what you do? You know, that question, like, this is pretty much, you know, so we don't lose everyone by the end, but this is where I'm going to tell you, I don't do it all. That's the answer. That's the secret is I don't. Something will drop when I pick something else up. My key now is wherever I am, and that's where I'm going to be. So even to my kids, I love my kids, but right, you know, if I'm in a space with somebody, I will tell them, I will get back to you. And so instead of being everything to everyone, I'm going to be exactly where I am, and I'm going to give you everything I have right then. And she allowed me, she literally said, so what do you need? And I had no idea. And I think that's fair. I mean, when I look back, I'm so used to having the answers. If you're not okay, that's okay. And you don't even have to know what you're supposed to do next. I was in such a gifted place where she just said, well, why don't you just go home? And why don't I just shut down your email for a little bit? And I'm like, shut down my email? Like, no, anything else. Yeah. My car, but don't shut down my email. And it was just this space of like, but I'm the world, quote unquote, needs me. But the world didn't need that version of how I was showing up, you know, and I needed to take care of myself. So are you okay? And I won't go into their personal intimate details, but hundreds of people after reading this book have reached out to me with that being life-saving to them because they asked themselves that and they were embarrassingly had to say, it's not embarrassing, but it is to yourself. If you have a pride like I did, I needed to tell everyone that I can do this and I'm fine. When you can say, okay, the first step's like in your own journal or just in your shower, just to say, okay, I'm not okay. Start somewhere.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and you said, you know, my battery phone was always at 1%, and so was I, you know, so.
My car always has 11 lights on it. Like, you know, I Googled my car, Lisa, and you can do this. Don't do this, everyone. Don't do this. This is what not to do. But you can Google and see after empty how many miles you can drive on your car. So I would just play that to the end too. And every light I'm thinking, huh, my body kind of feels like every light's on too, but I'm going to ignore those. I'm just going to hit okay and go past those. So yes, very simple tactical things of when the light comes on or, you know, your heart's hurting or your knee's hurting. It's a real thing.
So good. Well, I seriously want, you know, our listeners to go and get your book. Love what you do. And I'll let you give the URL and we'll put it in the show notes and everything for Fabric because you can get it from there. You can get it off of Amazon. But, you know, so Dana, here's the thing. You would not say any of these things about yourself, but you've been blessed. You've gotten a lot of awards, a lot of accolades, Business Person of the Year, Women Making a Mark, 40 Under 40. You've been in Elle, the Wall Street Journal, quoted in Forbes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I could just go on and on. I know that you've not done any of those things for accolades. You know, so I really want to move into now what, because of Fabric, I mean, Fabric, you love Fabric, but there have been other amazing, beautiful things that have come out of that I really want you to talk about. Free Fabric, and it used to be Asher, the Asher clothing line. I think it's something else now, but tell our listeners about those things.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. Like everyone listening, you can't see my face, but this is my happy place. I had no idea that, you know, outside of a black fitted suit with Louboutins that something could be happier. And when I moved into this heart part of my life, it just blew my heart away. And it started really because people kept saying, congratulations on your success. And everywhere I entered, they would give, you know, those beautiful things that my career has notched in a belt. And those are important. I loved those moments in my life, like Business Person of the Year from this little girl that didn't even know she was going to go to college, rocked. But congratulations on your success. And I started asking when people said that, what do you mean? They're like, oh, you're just building this empire. You're building all these clothing stores. And it just stopped having that magnificent feeling that I needed it to feel. It was so for me. And it was for me. And I just remember thinking, huh, I wonder what I'm supposed to do with this. So fast forward, Free Fabric is our nonprofit. And now we build completely free fabric boutiques inside of safe houses, inside of homeless shelters that look just like fabric. And that's the, to me, it's the dignity. She's clothes in strength and dignity. This clothing is all donated by communities. So every fabric location has a big bin, and all of our amazing shoppers come in, and once they're done wearing something, they put it in the bin and we put it into these stores. And this is not clothing. We won't allow anything that's missing a button, that has a teeny stain on it, that's from 1902, purple suit, hated, and it has cat hair. We don't want that either. Our girls and women deserve the most beautiful. So we put this in there with a zero price tag because these women are priceless. And they, every single time we go in, we bring the women in each community that we have stores, and we go and shop with the women, and we snatch everyone with the stylist, and we're walking around, and the women will be like, is this really free? Why are you here? What is happening right now? This is the outfit I'm going to wear to walk back into court and to tell my pimp he's a jerk, or to get my daughter back, or these stories that, you know, when you put on something, I do it and I'm like, this is my dress. I have a pair of shoes I wear for every speech, same pair, because they just make me feel like my confidence is there. So imagine that outfit and the power of that outfit, the armor. And that's what we're doing. And what I love is it brought in that vision of the women that are shopping are then giving their clothing. That clothing's now going into these safe houses to be with this woman to give that same confidence. And it just keeps going. And then we're going into these safe houses, reminding these women, well, we come in to act like we're reminding them how strong and how awesome they are. They end up usually reminding us how, you know, strong and awesome we are, because we're like the faith and the power and all of it. So that's Free Fabric. And so once that started, you know, in my book, I talk about like kind of that passion purpose crossing over, and, you know, you get excited. You're like, what's next? So when we went through the adoption process with my daughter, Asher, it takes a long time. And if you've ever been in it, or if you're in it now, please stay in it. It's long, it's hard, it's odd, it doesn't seem fair when you just want to, you know, be a mama to a baby, but it took us 4 years. And so to keep that, you know, alive in my heart and keep my heart inspired, we started a clothing line. And so basically all the clothing, every time you bought it, the proceeds went to an orphanage in Africa, which we ended up adopting. I think it was maybe, I don't want to say the wrong number, but over 70 babies. We paid for the adoption for these babies to make sure that they had mamas. And so the idea that clothing can do that, you know, it still blows my mind. It still makes me go, whoa, what else can we do? And so of course I did. And so now we have a clothing line called Clothe the Globe, and that builds free boutiques throughout the globe. We just opened in Belize. We've opened, I mean, we have, you know, University of Georgia all over. And those are just places where we're building confidence, but without the price tag. I mean, fabric was built off the concept of everything's under 100. You shouldn't be a millionaire to have to, you know, to shop like one. And we wanted you to feel, you know, that you're getting a glass of champagne and, you know, you feel like Versace, but it's, you know, a $40 shirt. So everyone should be treated that way. So now that's what Free Fabric and Clothe the Globe are doing. And thank you for asking, because you know I'd spend the entire time on this. It just feels, I'm going to use the word easy, and I don't use that word lightly. You know, I'm a mom of three teenage boys and a daughter. Nothing, you know, and work and company and building a brand and managing teams is not easy. This feels like you're in your flow. I'm using this clothing in a way that just feels like, I mean, the amount of people that reach out that say, I know how else, I'd love to help. You know, when that starts happening, that you are in a place that is pretty blessed. And it's like, I can't imagine fabric without Free Fabric at this point.
Yeah. I'm speechless. Seriously, Dana, just hearing you talk about it, because I'm just so, I'm so grateful that you didn't stop, that you didn't stop at fabric, you know, which really fueled your soul, but then you took it so much further where you are making just such a huge impact. So, you know, the two other things I want to talk about before we talk about something extra. So this is kind of a fun thing. Go Google Dana and you'll see a lot of cool things that she's done. But one of the things, and I watched this episode and I just cracked up. So Your Home was on network, was on the Design Network season one of Celebrity House Sitting. And I cracked up watching that episode because I think the girl's name was Leah. And she came in and house set for you, and you probably went shopping or went to the fabric store or whatever. And she came in and lived in your home for a while. She just was hilarious. I loved that episode. If you just want a little bit of levity,
my home is like, it's like my closet. Like, I love it. It's all black and white, of course. Everything's just like curated. So when they're like, we're going to come in your house, I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. And then I didn't get to know what happened. So I'm watching the episode too. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's so funny. But see, I'm a say yes to, like, if there's not a real reason to say no, I'm a yes. So I start with yes. So unless you give me a good reason to say no, I'm in.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, it was hilarious. I loved it. You know, and I learned something about your home. So a lot, you know, your home is beautiful and like you said, perfectly curated, but a lot of the art pieces and stuff like that, I think came from your mom and dad, you know, and them being able to, you know, from their supply chain or whatnot, you know, so I thought that was really cool. The other thing I want to talk to you about real quickly, if you could help our listeners, especially our female listeners, you know, if Dana, what are the 5, 6, whatever staples that they need in their closet? And I told you, Dana, I want you to come to my house in St. Louis. I want you to come into my closet, you know, but what are those 5 or 6 articles that every woman needs?
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with what you and I talked about before. The first one is an article. It's a human that can tell you the truth. Because you might have those 5 articles and you love them, but they might be the wrong ones. And I can tell you, it's the greatest feeling when you love. So you've got to have a perfect pair of skinny jeans. You have to have the black skinny jeans that when you put them on, you're like, these look amazing. You've got to turn around. You've got to love how your butt looks in them. Like this is superficial, very important stuff.
Yes.
But there is something about your go-to outfits that you can say, and then you need, I don't know if you have an dress or a top today, but you need a great black tank to go with that. So that's a basis for everything. So you can put tennis shoes on. So you need those amazing tennis shoes that you're going to wear that outfit to pick your kids up. But then you switch it to your favorite pair of heels and a really amazing, mine's a white blazer that doesn't leave my car. And all of a sudden, you can go right into a meeting. You can go to a meeting. You can go to happy hour. It is those elements. So black jeans, a great black tank, tennis shoes, the coolest. Just splurge a little. Just get a wild pair. This isn't the all white version that you want. This is one that shows your personality. A pair of heels that you love. They have to be comfortable.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, comfort's everything. And then a blazer, I'm going to be really honest, this is really vulnerable and I don't tell everyone this. It's really hard and annoying to walk with a blazer over your shoulders. It's really hard, but it looks cool. So when you can do it, just do it. And it's hard. So just put the blazer over your shoulder. You just take it off when you sit down and that's your go-to. You can switch that up with denim, but that's what every woman needs. You already know about your little black dresses and all that. That's the one that kind of, you know, brings you carpool chic, but it also brings you like conference room chic.
I love it. I love it. I love it so much. Oh my goodness. Well, Dana, this is something extra. What is the something extra you believe every leader needs?
Thanks for asking. I will tell you my answer would have been very different my whole life until this year. Leaders, including myself, need to learn to listen better. When you're a leader, you believe some false term that you were pulled into the meeting, you were pulled into the group, you were pulled into the room to fix it and to answer the question. Most of the time I've learned my team just wants me to know it's hard. They want me to listen to the end of the sentence, then be quiet for 10 seconds to soak it in, to hear it, and then just maybe cry with them. Mm. Maybe just say, oh my God, you missed the goal. I get it. And my entire career, I waited for halfway through the sentence, I knew the answer. So I was going to tell them this answer to fix this question. Mm-hmm. And that was never what it was about. So I will say this year, I've learned this in a magnitude that has blown me away. And it's not just obviously in business, it's in friendships, it's in
family,
it's in, yes, a spouse of, oh, so yes, listen to really hear it and then just still be quiet for a moment and absorb. It's an emotional sandbag. I remember one of my kids' teachers was telling, like, just be an emotional sandbag. I was like, wow, that sounds like a big thing. I'm like, no, that's listening. It's like, I can hold that with you and just be with you. So that is what I would say is something extra.
Well, I could spend hours and hours and hours and days with you, Dana, but we do need
to close. I'll be in your closet soon, right, Lisa? Do I get to come to your closet soon?
I want you to come to my closet. All right. And I'll have a line of women probably wanting you to come to their closet too. But thank you again so much for being on the show. And I cannot wait to give you a hug one of these days very soon, hopefully, maybe October. So it's good to see you.
You too, Lisa. We'll talk soon.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.